You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Before we get started with our weekly journey through the jungles with Ron McGill, and before we start talking to him about some uncomfortable subject matter that was covered in Sex and the Animals and the history of Sex and the Animals and the upcoming Mystery Crate that people are very excited about, I just wanted Ron McGill to enjoy another live Zoom viewing, and I wanted Amin to enjoy this as well. Before we get started with Ron McGill, we want to get in a Greg Cody back in my day. I need to explain to Ron McGill that the reason Greg Cody is standing, Ron, is because he's better as a performer, entertainer when he is standing. Sitting in a chair is not the way any great performers did any great piece of art. So, Greg Cody, how are you feeling about your back in my day? Ron McGill and Amin El-Hassan are here as your audience to support your entertaining and your performing here. How are you feeling about what you're doing right now? Wandering. Oh, Ron, we've learned that he's just better strolling around, thinking that it's a radio show instead of a podcast. So, Greg, without over-delivering, are you ready? Do you think this is going to be good?
I'm ready. You never know okay. Whether it's going to be good, but yes, I'm ready.
All right, so very good. Well, you never know. Let's go. Let's get started.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Stock market. How is it that in the last couple of months, all of a sudden, everyone is an expert in the market? A self-appointed stockbroker wheeling and dealing on a laptop at the dining room table. Back in my day, if you wanted to invest, you went to an actual stockbroker's office and sought advice from an old guy in a green eyeshade visor with a pencil behind his ear who told you, you can't go wrong with Coca-Cola. You bought 20 shares, crossed your fingers, and that was that. An investor used to walk out with a portfolio. Now he clicks on an app. Digital discount brokerages are taking over. Now everybody's a day trader. It's the new drug for millennials. It's like fantasy football, but with consequences. Day trading. I'm too busy day drinking. There's only so many hours in a day. In a world where my son, Chris, has somehow turned himself into a successful day trader, too many people are day trading. Something ain't right. Mike Ryan knew nothing of stocks. Suddenly he's the Wolf of Wall Street. Robin Hood used to steal from the rich to give to the poor. Now he limits your purchase of skyrocketing stocks to protect hedge funds. Robin Hood, TD Ameritrade. I can't keep up. I can't get whatever happened to the trade E-Trade baby. Everything about money and the economy is changing. I'm still trying to wrap my head around direct deposit. Me and Levitard are the only people on earth still writing checks. Now Bitcoin and Dogecoin are in a bitter war. Whatever happened to actual coins? When was the last time you held a penny? A dime has become a rare artifact, like finding a velociraptor bone. Cryptocurrency. Please, back in my day, you smoked crypto. I saw a stockholder the other day at an intersection holding a cardboard sign that read, "We'll trade for food." Quit day trading and give that poor man his career back. And while we're at it, let's bring back coins. The real ones. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
Ron McGill seemed confused by much of what was happening there, and I believe the thing that he was most confused by is, what do you mean, Greg Cody, you and Dan are the only one out here writing checks? Do you think, you guys think that Ron McGill's not out here writing checks? You think he's doing a whole lot of wiring of money?
I don't know.
I do write checks. Actually, my wife writes checks more than I do, but I am writing checks, guys. I don't trust a lot of that web stuff. I just think somebody's in there going to steal it.
Right, the Venmo, the Zelles. Like, is it going to get there? Where's it going? There's something cathartic about writing a good old-fashioned check, you know?
Damn right. Damn right.
Guillermo, put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Are you still writing checks? What was that line about E-Trade in the middle of that, Cody, before we get to some Ron McGill questions?
Yeah, I stumbled on that. I was actually wondering whatever happened to the E-Trade baby, because the original E-Trade baby would be 21 years old now. You know, is he pushing dope in La Jolla? What's he doing?
He's a day trader. That's what happened to him.
I don't know. He's probably, destitute. I don't know.
Wait, why did you assume that the original E-Trade baby is either destitute or pushing dope in La Jolla? Is that what you said?
Right. Yeah, it's because child celebrities, you know, if you're a celebrity as a baby, you're on the wrong path. You know, you're on a rail to hell. It happens all the time with child actors, celebrity babies. You know, if like the original girl,
Mike Ryan,
probably Herber going through hard times.
Alfalfa from Little Rascals. What a horrible story that was.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Exactly.
Chris Cody, very modern, all of us, what we're doing right now. Chris Cody has written in the chat. He knows this about us. You guys still write out $130. Write out
the
word.
You guys have to write out the thing. Zero out of 100.
Yeah, little line, zero over 100.
Yeah.
It's my favorite part.
Yep. This way nobody can mess with the numbers that you actually wrote.
Exactly.
Right. Which part of this are you guys not understanding?
So old.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's right. I'm sorry. Recently promoted day trader, Chris Cody.
That's
your father in the middle of that is howling at the idea of you having some sort of internet financial expertise.
Ron, how do you handle when it's cents, though? Because I had to write a check the other day, and I had to write cents, and it says dollars crossed out.
You put the little zero, whatever the cent is, over
XX.
Correct. The fraction.
Yeah, except you guys don't do any fractions anymore. I mean, you're allowed to use calculators in school.
Yeah.
I had a slide rule. Now you guys don't even have to know arithmetic anymore. Mm-hmm.
It's a shame.
Why are you guys laughing?
How old are you, Ron?
61.
Oh, yeah, the abacus.
You look great.
Oh, Roy, I legit got slide rule and abacus mixed up.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Do you get the slide rule and the abacus mixed up like Amin? Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill this week?
Ron, why have we as humans chose a groundhog to decide whether to shorten or extend winter?
Man, I haven't the slightest idea. That was probably some drunk binge night that some guys got together. They saw this groundhog because it's nothing more than a big fat rat with no tail. And they said, this guy just saw a shadow. I mean, that there is absolutely no principle to why that came about. I have no idea. Strictly alcohol involved, for sure.
Well, Billy is confused by a lot of things about the groundhog, right, Billy?
I mean, I'm confused by lots of things. How do we know that this guy saw his shadow or not? Why do we trust Punxsutawney Phil? Is it still the same one? Are there multiple Phils? It's a whole thing, Ron, that I don't want to get into because I know that there's people out there that if you ask too much.
You know, but you ruin people's world. Like, it's like Flipper. You know, there were like 20 Flippers, man.
What? No, there weren't.
There were 20 Flippers.
No, there weren't.
Okay, I handled Elvis. Anybody who saw the show Miami Vice, the alligator Elvis? Well, I handled Elvis, and there were about 7 different Elvises, depending on the shot. So this is all fake. It's all fake stuff. You know, it's just people, and then all of a sudden, they start following. You get a bunch of old men in top hats that pick up this big fat rat with no tail, and they say it sees its shadow or it doesn't see its shadow. It gives them something to do.
Greg Cody, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Ron, there were viral videos this week of pandas frolicking in the snow. And it made me wonder, in your experience, what animal leads the league in adorable when it is having a great time at play?
You know, that's almost any baby animal. But baby pandas, of course, young pandas, they had that black circles on their eyes and the big white face. They're very cuddly, so they're absolutely adorable. But almost any baby animal playing is going to be adorable. We just automatically associate with that as just young, cute, beautiful, and adorable. I can't pick a favorite. They're just all absolutely adorable. Sorry.
What about the adult?
No, adult animals, you know, I think if you watch things like chimps and elephants, you know, you see an elephant in a big pool of mud. Oh, my God, it's hilarious to watch them just throwing mud all over each other, splashing and trumpeting and doing, I mean, really having a great time. I really enjoy that. And chimps, of course, because they do many of the things that we do. I mean, you can see them tickle each other. You see them laugh. You see them do these goofy things that we immediately associate with. So chimps and elephants are a blast to watch as adults when they're having fun.
What is the animal that somebody, the uninitiated, might say, that is super, super cute, and Ron McGill would look at and say, are you crazy? Because you don't see the cute, you only see the dangerous. You see an animal that is capable of doing damage. Is that a landline in your office, Ron?
I'm sorry. I'm in an office, guys. I'm sorry. You know, but don't
sounds like
about
a fax.
Anyway, that animal would probably be like an otter. People look at otters, and they look so cute, you know, especially when they're on their bellies and they're working with their little clams or the river otters in there, and they make those cute little noises. An otter will tear you up. I mean, you look at an otter, they got a great set of teeth. Remember, they eat things like crustaceans, so they're biting through huge, hard shells. You pick up an otter, it's just going to tear you all apart, man. It's brutal what an otter can do to you.
Did you guys know that about otters? Did you guys know that otters, put it on the poll, Guillermo, did you know that otters were brutal?
How about an animal that looks menacing but is not?
Animal that's menacing but is not. Gosh, that's hard to say. Actually, I don't look at many. Most animals that look menacing can be pretty menacing.
Did I stump Ron? I mean.
Well, no, you know, I mean, if you look at things like there's certain, like there's a bird called the sunbittern, and the sunbittern, when it gets frightened, it opens its wings and spreads them out. And it's got these huge eyes to turn open its wings. It looks like it's got these big eyes that are going to attack you. And it's what it uses to fend off predators. But the bird can't really do anything. It's just a bird. It's just going to fly away. It doesn't even have a powerful bill on it. So it does this thing when it gets alarmed. It opens its wings real wide, and it has these big eyes on each wing. So it looks like it's staring at you with these huge eyes like it's going to attack you. It looks kind of menacing, but it really isn't. There's also something like a barn owl. If you are a corner of a barn owl, now it could hurt you with its talons, but it's not really menacing. But if you cornered it, it makes this scream where it kind of goes, they're really bad. I mean, it sounds like the end of the world is coming. So that can sound pretty menacing, but it's not. The bark is much worse than the bite.
Amin, what do you have for McGill?
Ron, at the zoo where you have birds that aren't caged like flamingos, how do you guys make sure they don't fly away?
Well, those birds, in a flock like flamingos, we don't have to do it to all the flamingos, but because they're so connected to each other, what we do is we pinion just a few of them, or we clip the wings on just a few of them. And by clipping those wings, those few can't fly away. And they're so bonded to each other that generally speaking, the rest of the flock stays together. You know, most birds, when we have an open exhibit like that, we do clip their wings to prevent them, but we have to keep that up to make sure. And we sometimes know we let it go too long when we'll see one kind of fly off exhibit. We got to catch it again. But generally, you can clip the wings and they do very well. You just have to be very careful because on some birds, they need all the feathers and all their wings to do the courtship dance in order to be able to successfully reproduce. So on those birds, we can't have them in wide open exhibits. We have to put a roof on the exhibit so they can't fly away, but they can still do their dance by using their full wings and doing the dance.
It's a weird thing to say about someone who's associated with a zoo and the idea of limiting a animal's freedom, but I would think that spiritually, Ron, that you would be somebody who would be super careful about not wanting to impinge any animal's natural state. So something like clipping even the flight of a couple of flamingos would be something that would hurt you and you would be very careful about. Which is the one that is morally most difficult for you, where you have to limit an animal's freedom and therefore are making it less happy than it might otherwise be with total freedom, but you have to do it in the name of zoo and business?
Well, Dan, you got to look at it from a different perspective because, you know, when we clip the wings of birds, understand that birds do not fly for fun. Okay, birds fly to get to food and to escape predators. At the zoo, it's like Club Med here. They get their food presented to them like it's catered. We are protected from predators, so they really don't have a reason to fly. And I can show you, there's several species of birds. For instance, the cormorants in the Galapagos Islands. they're now flightless. They originally flighted cormorants, but because there's no natural predators for cormorants, there's an abundance of food, they stopped flying. They lost those muscles, and they are now flightless. So by clipping the wings of a bird, it's not necessarily being cruel, unless, of course, it's necessary to do the courtship dance. And that's why you need to understand an animal. You need to understand that before that happens. As far as not letting an animal, restricting an animal, I tell you, the one for me that's probably the hardest would be elephants, because elephants, I think, are normally very nomadic, and even as large as the exhibits that we have here at the zoo, it's still not as large as I would like it to be for a herd of elephants. You know, they are naturally nomadic elephant that travels great distances in the wild. I've been able to see that. So having to restrict that by limiting them within an exhibit for me is a little bit difficult.
Ron, in North Carolina, I think it was yesterday, a guy was taking his boa to the vet, and the snake got stuck in the dashboard, and five cops had to come and help the snake out. There has to be a better way to get the snake to a doctor than the way this guy did it, which is just throw him in the car and say, let's go to the vet. I mean, what is he doing?
He wasn't the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Anybody who works with snakes or reptiles, I'm sorry about this phone, guys. I don't know what it is. It's a popular day for me. The way to handle almost any reptile is that they need to be put in a large pillowcase. Depending on the size of the reptile, the larger the pillowcase, you tie the pillowcase in a knot, then you put that pillowcase within another container. It's called secondary containment. People say, oh my God, it's going to suffocate. No, they don't. They breathe very well through the fabric of any pillowcase. That's the way all snakes, most reptiles are transported safely. You put them in the pillowcase, put the pillowcase in a sky kennel or some other type of carrier, and that's how you transport them. Anybody who transports a snake by letting it roam free or puts it around their neck while they're driving or something like that is just not very smart.
Ron, out of curiosity, how many times a day usually does the landline in your office ring?
I don't know, 30, 40. Okay. The trouble is, a lot of times I get wrong people. They know my name, so they go on to the whatever.
They call the operator and ask for Rob McGill.
No, the directory, the right. Staff directory, you know, and they punch in my name, and then they go to me. They go, listen, man, I can't believe you answered the phone, but this is what I need to tell you. I go, hold on a second, I got to transfer you. And that's what happens a lot, thanks to you guys.
Okay, but didn't it dawn on you at any point that perhaps we might be calling you and making that happen in your office? Did you?
Oh, is that what it was? No. I thought you usually do it to hear my crickets on my phone, which I was
trying that number, but I'm assuming Billy or I don't know who else was calling you. Who's guilty of calling Ron during that segment? Who did that?
Why do you guys do that? I'm pretty sure
it's Billy.
Why do you guys do that? You're adults. Billy,
I knew somebody. It's such a good question, Ron. Why would anyone do that? Because he's Billy. That's why.
Who would do that?
What do you mean? Ron, what did you do with Amin and Chris Cody? Explain to people the history of sex and the animals. Explain to them why it's a special thing that you just did with Chris and Amin for this week's Mystery Crate.
Well, first of all, I haven't done it for a couple of years because I put it to bed. I said, I'm not ever doing it again. I kind of did it for you guys because it's you guys. And, you know, listen, basically what it is, it's answering all the questions that I know all of you have but are afraid to ask because nobody wants to be stereotyped as some kind of pervert. And it's a talk that came up when if you come to the zoo on any given day, Dan, and everybody in the zoo is in front of one exhibit and they're jumping over each other's shoulders to see what's going on in the exhibit, the animals are having sex in the exhibit. There's no question about it. People are fascinated by it. They don't want to be labeled. But if they're at the zoo, you know, and I know they're embarrassed because I'll catch them looking at it and everybody's staring and I look at them and then they look at me and they'll say something like, what are they doing? Like they're trying to be naive, like they have no idea what's going on. Please stop it, okay? So I just came up with this presentation to say, let me answer all your questions because I know you've got them. And is this you guys? It's Billy Gill. Is that Billy Gill? Is that Mike? Is that you? Are you calling me? We're doing a podcast and you're calling me? So anyway, we do this presentation to answer the question. I don't use any bad language or anything, but it's graphic. And I tell you things. You know, we talk about things like, you know, how animals will masturbate, how animals use certain toys to make things better for them, how animals are titillated by certain things that maybe are titillating to humans also. You know, different fetishes that animals may have that people may say, oh, see, it's not just me. What I'm trying to show people is that there's nothing really abnormal about some of the things that we think about. It's actually quite natural, but animals don't get hung up on things. They don't watch things like Dr. Phil or Oprah or stupid shows like that tell you what you're supposed to do or what you're supposed to expect. So if it feels good, they do it. and there's a lot we can learn from them. So that's what we talk about.
Chris, how much talking around do we have to do? The question that would tease the episode that you've been talking about in the shadows, where you believe we got an intimate look into the sex life of Ron McGill as well, not just the animals.
I knew that was going there, Dan. I knew it. After I finished that podcast, I said, you know what? I shouldn't have talked about that. I knew it.
All right, baby.
There's just no doubt in my mind that Ron is great in the bed.
Well, let me tell you, my wife's going to kill me. My wife is going to kill me. Dan, she's going to hate you for this.
I didn't do it. Dan.
I mean, hate you for what he says. It's a compliment.
Wait a minute. What did I do? All I did.
Ron, am I wrong?
Ron, you're so good, right?
No, stop it, guys.
Mirrors. Mirrors, boys.
I mean, why, man?
Spoiler alert.
I thought we were brothers, man.
You do the butt stuff?
You're my brother.
God bless America.
What's your go-to move?
Butt stuff.
Killing me, Stu, guys. You're killing me. Oh, man. Oh, Lord have mercy. I'm in deep water now. I'm in trouble. I knew it was coming. It's just a matter of time.
Coming?
Baby.
Babies. This is a podcast. Babies.
Are we still recording?
I don't know.
I'm going to go off the audio.
Ron. Thank you very much.
We love you, Ron.
Right, listen, you guys, you have a wonderful
Ron. Hey, thank Ron,
you.
Call Billy back, all right?
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Guys, since yesterday was the Super Bowl and we couldn't get to Pedro Gomez's untimely death, we also couldn't get to sound that I've been sitting on from the weekend, and we made room for Lou Dobbs because that's an all-timer. But I'd like to play King of the Mountain just so I can rush three sounds out there. I'm going to play three sounds, and you guys tell me which is the best of these three. All right? You guys ready to play King of the Mountain?
It sounds like a great game. We enjoyed
three sounds, best of the three.
You're not claiming any of these are better than Lou Dobbs.
No, Lou Dobbs is gold standard, but maybe. Let's do it that way. Okay. Lou Dobbs is the King of the Mountain, and I'm bringing three challengers. Are we pushing Lou Dobbs off the mountain with any of these three sounds?
Okay.
All right, the first sound is from the Aussie Open. Nick Kyrgios, who is Australian and part Greek, he had an interesting press conference in which he was asked about Novak Djokovic. Are you guys familiar with what Nick Kyrgios's reputation is on the tour?
Bad boy, petulant. He goes back to a different time. A little bit of McEnroe. Stugatz, the glory days of Ilie Nastasi. He's nasty.
Wow.
He's bad. He's bad news, this guy. Personality.
Right. So when he starts calling into question your judgment, perhaps it's a time for self-reflection. He was asked about Novak Djokovic, who has a reputation on the tour. Here's what Nick Kyrgios had to say about him.
He's a very strange cat, Novak is. Heck of a tennis player, but unfortunately, someone that's partying with his shirt off during a global pandemic, I don't know if... Oh, I can take any slack from that, man. Like, that's as bad as it gets for me.
Okay, Bill, last question. Thank you.
That was a good answer, bro. Bang.
Take yourself off mute, please, Bill.
Nailed it, bro.
Bill, you're on mute.
Come on, Billy.
Can you hear?
A couple of different things going on there.
I love that.
Nick Kyrgios with a controversial opinion, a journalist forgetting to take themselves off mute, and Nick Kyrgios being delighted in the fact that he gave you something.
That was a good answer. Did he say that was a good answer? Bang.
Yeah, he stuck the landing, and he was proud of it. Yep.
He might have said, bruv.
A very strange cat, Novak is. Heck of a tennis player, but I unfortunately, as someone that's partying with his shirt off during a global pandemic, I don't know if I can take any slack from that, man. Like, that's as bad as it gets for me.
Okay, Bill, last question. Thank you.
That was a good answer, bro.
Take yourself off mute, please, Bill.
I love he drills the good and the bruh. Like, I nailed that. I will never beat Djokovic at anything in tennis, but I got him there. I won a point there. You were dancing during a pandemic with your shirt off, and I can judge you as the bad boy of the sport.
Djokovic has he's carved out this weird corner, which is always pushing back on pandemic protocol, and like Nick Kyrgios said, there's video and Snapchats of him having fun in Serbia. He hosted the first tournament there, so Nick Kyrgios, not with the decision making of one Novak Djokovic.
I'm confused. If Djokovic had had his shirt on, would Nick Kyrgios been a lot more kind of tolerant?
That was the extra. That was the extra. Shirt off, it was the extra bonus in the cruelty of the comment. It's why he said the bruh. That was a good answer, bruh, because I got him. I got him because he was shirtless.
Right. Not just partying during the pandemic. Right. Shirtless partying.
It's not just anti-vaxxer. No, he was shirtless. He's a guy who parties in the club shirtless. What an asshole! And that's coming from Nick Kyrgios,
who is reputed to be the biggest one on the tour.
In sports, maybe. Yes.
So we all agree, though, while it's a good sound, Lou Dobbs still king of the mountain. Here's the next sound. And there was an introductory press conference over at Marshall University. And
Wait a minute. Is this the strength coach?
Strength coaches have a bit of a reputation of being a bit wild. You want a crazy guy running your strength and conditioning
program. Has
Stugatz
seen this? Have you seen the real life Tim Jerns? Have you seen
this
guy?
No, I have not.
All right. So Marshall football strength and conditioning guy is fired up and he's being introduced to the thundering herd audience that is ready to get fired up by a strength and conditioning coach.
Let's go get this mug. I'm going to teach you how to do this after this. It's Herd Jacks. Here's what we do. We say, Herd Jacks, team ready, you say ready. We say, Herd Jacks, team ready, you say ready. Herd exercise. H-E-R-D. Herd head. Let's go to work.
Now, what needs to be said there is that I think he's in a suit and doing jumping jacks.
Come on.
I believe he is in a too tight suit or a shirt?
Is there any
coat.
Other kind for okay. Ben Ashford?
All right, so now let me give you that bit of context. First of all, this person is a human being who's a square. Secondly, he's got a big beard, and he sounds and looks exactly identical. This is exactly what you were expecting. And again, he's in a sports coat, and he's doing too tight jumping jacks.
Let's go get this mug. I'm going to teach you how to do this after this. It's Herd Jacks. Here's what we do. We say, Herd Jacks, team ready, you say ready. We say, Herd Jacks, team ready, you say ready. Herd exercise. H-E-R-D. Herd head. Let's go to work.
Okay. I will also say that let's take all of the context that I just gave you out visually of what he was doing in a press conference, and now just understand that this is secret audio of the Marshall strength and conditioning coach having sex.
Let's go get this mug. I'm going to teach you how to do this after this. It's Herd Jacks. Here's what we do. We say, Herd Jacks, team ready, you say ready. We say, Herd Jacks, team ready, you say ready. Herd exercise. H-E-R-D. Herd head. Let's go to work. H-E-R-D. Herd head. Let's go to work.
It does sound like sex. It also sounds just like West Virginia. Yes, West Virginia.
So I love that in the video, you can see the ceiling because the backdrop isn't tall enough. It just adds to the Parks and Rec quality of this strength coach.
But Lou Dobbs, Silk King of the Mountain.
Yes.
All right, so he's taking on all challengers.
That strength coach, by the way, lit a wooden paddle on fire and broke it over his assistant's back before a Marshall game to get everyone fired up, and they lost.
That's right. Yeah. They lost? So probably would be a weird introductory press conference if he was there last year, so I'll correct myself there. Yes. Lou Dobbs, still King of the Mountain, though. Final challenger, and it's Lee Burnick. A high school basketball broadcast gives us this one.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Before you go down this path, I just want to set this up for Stugatz just a little bit because it's funny by itself. But Stugatz, I don't believe that you have heard this yet because this takes a turn. You have to be careful. I don't want to foreshadow too much here, but you have to be careful when in the live action sporting events. Whittingham, you probably know some of this as someone who has called games. You have to, in hockey and basketball, you have to be very judicious about if you're going to tell a story that requires some unspooling, because the action will take you away very quickly because the sport moves correctly, correct? So there have been some funny ones on this, Whittingham, but the one we're about to play for you, I think, is a broadcaster's nightmare.
Especially on radio.
Right, so visually, you're not seeing anything. Imagine just listening to this as somebody goes into a heartfelt tale and then the game breaks out around it.
You know, Craig. Well, and then there's one more. Gone, but not forgotten, and that's our sweet Daisy, or our sweet Lucy. At the age of 12, she was run over.
Oh, yes.
In our driveway.
Oh, like that? Was she run over like that?
As Tyree hammers it down, there's a timeout on the floor as Lakers spurt out to a 4-0. Two turnover.
No.
Yes.
The Lakers are on fire, up 16.
No.
17-20 to go.
They are on fire. And yes, our hearts and minds are with your sweet Lucy.
Yes.
In dog heaven.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to know what happened to her? Yeah, Sabrina ran her over.
That's a dog.
Makes
dog,
it better that it's a dog. Dog.
It's a dog.
For a second, I thought it was a
dog. Feel a little bit better. Yeah, it's a dog.
You guys feel better because you thought it was a 12-year-old child?
I was going to have it replaced. Yes. It was about to replace Dobbs until it was a dog.
Wait a minute. I mean, you make it a dog. It's still bad, at least in part because you don't know what they're talking about. Again, a dunk has broken out in the middle of somebody telling the story of a dog being run over, the family pet being run over in the driveway.
You know, Craig.
Well, and then there's one more. There's one more gone, but not forgotten, and that's our sweet Daisy, or our sweet Lucy. At the age of 12, she was run over.
Oh, yes.
In our driveway.
Oh, like that? Was she run over like that?
As Tyree hammers it down, there's a timeout on the floor as Lakers spurt out to a 4-0, two turnover, two dunk. Start to the second half, and the Lakers are on fire, up 16, 17-20 to go.
They are on fire. And yes, our hearts and minds are with your sweet Lucy.
Yes.
In dog heaven.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to know what happened to her? Yeah, Sabrina ran her over.
The relief I had when he revealed it was a dog. I don't know if anyone else.
I just love the awkward dedication of the play-by-play guy still trying to respect in the middle of that. Oh, I've got to give time and score. It reminded me of the Brenneman apology.
Tom Brenneman.
No matter what happens here, even if there's a dead dog on the driveway, I've got to keep powering through here and give the information of time and score.
You know, Craig.
Well, and then there's one more. There's one more gone, but not forgotten. And that's our sweet Daisy, or our sweet Lucy. At the age of 12, she was run over.
Oh, yes.
In our driveway.
Oh. Like that? Was she run over like that?
As Tyree hammers it down, there's a timeout on the floor as Lakers spurt out to a 4-0, two turnover, two dunk, start to the second half, and the Lakers are on fire, up 16, 17-20 to go.
They are on fire. And yes, our hearts and minds are with your sweet Lucy.
Yes.
In dog heaven.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to know what happened to her? Yeah, Sabrina ran her over.
It's a great job by the analyst. I mean, it really is. To roll with it on the fly, it reminds me of Reese Davis when he did
with John. It's a terrible job.
Run over like that? I mean, he picked up the conversation right where it left off.
Yeah, that's really bad. That's bad.
Lucy was 12. Lucy, she lived a good life. Lucy was 12.
Once the play-by-play guy starts down the my dog died anecdote, you cannot transition from the dog died anecdote into play-by-play of a dunk. Did she get run over like that? Like, those two things cannot be combined.
You have to. You can't stop sports. Sports are going on. You have to bring it back to the game, and that's exactly what he did. Didn't miss a beat.
Notice at the end that this guy threw his wife under the bus as well. So he blames.
Oh, no. No, Roy, that's exactly what, he threw his wife under the bus, and also he doesn't even have the name of the dog right. Our sweet Daisy, Lucy.
Yeah.
Oh, clearly this dog didn't mean that much to him.
Yeah, she's not a puppy either. It's fine.
I felt bad for him. He got off to a bad start. Like, that already is going to take some time to tell the dog died story. Then you, on top of get off to a bad start in the middle of a basketball game, asking for trouble. No, dangerous game.
And you're in the middle. Dangerous game. You're in the middle of telling the story. And the worst possible result is steal and dunk. You can't. That's what it can't be in that situation.
The analyst. The analyst is really the Stugatz here because he took a sad story and he turned it into something completely different. I said, did you get on over like that? It's like Stugatz with the Marty Schottenheimer thing. It's just a little bit too much joy.
As bad as Stugatz's general judgment is, the idea that he thought that color man did that well, run over like that? Was it like that with your dog's guts in the driveway and his tongue out or her tongue out?
Great call.
You want to talk to him? I think we could get him.
Sure.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds, quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.